Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney. I was kind of wondering, when I turned on the radio this morning, I didn't hear the Garden Goo, I didn't hear the K-High Corral, I heard like pre-recorded stuff, and it made me wonder if there was anybody out there. That are we broadcasting to the dark side of the moon?
Good morning and welcome to the Medically Speaking Radio Show. We do hope that you're with us, even though we didn't have our regular Auburn shows, our Foothill shows, preceding our broadcast this morning, but we are glad that you're listening to us. We also want to remind you that today's show, where we'll be talking about how does one become a doctor and walk through the process with our guest, who's still in the process somewhat, we want you to know that we are on video. We are. You can go to medicallyspeakingradio.com, click video, and you can see us. And when you're on there, you can actually use the chat function to write to us during the show. That's a new thing that we're doing, that people, our listeners, can actually write in. We can have a dialogue here. We want it to be a conversation today. And you guys can ask questions about the process of becoming a doctor, medical education, or any medical topic. We'd be glad to take the questions. How has the weekend been going there, Larry?
Well, it's been a long weekend. I took the whole week off, so it's kind of taken me out of my normal routine. I forget what day it is. I was afraid I was going to sleep through this morning and forget it was Saturday, and because they all run together, I guess.
I thought yesterday was the day of the show.
Yeah, I have nightmares and panic about that. Like I wake up and go, oh, I should have been there, 20 minutes ago or whatever.
That you came to the studio with no clothes on.
Well, no, that wouldn't matter. Well, I guess we do video stream. So, yeah. In fact, maybe that would get, if we tell people we're doing the show in the nude, would they actually turn on the video stream? See, just to check to see if it's real.
Oh, that's awful.
It is. It really is.
We have our guest, Dr. Gwen Vaughn, who's going to be joining us for our discussion and interview time after the first break. But before that, we'd like to go over what you can do to get your fill of Medically Speaking Radio. Of course, we have the video stream at Medically Speaking Radio, which is live right now. It's also available pre-recorded if you come back later. The podcasts are available at iTunes. Just look under Medically Speaking Radio. And if you do that, please do rate us on there. That really helps us out to do that. Of course, it always helps if you support our advertisers, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, Sutter Auburn Hospice, the Auburn Medical Group, Auburn Drug, and Dr. Rodney Kihara, the dentist. We need to let you know that we do still have the birthing classes at Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital. If you go back at our notes in previous weeks, you can see that. Things going on medically in the world. We still have our major topics.
Well, I can see on the list here you have H1N1, but I think that H1N1 is the Y2K of this decade.
Thankfully, it's turning into that. Yeah. It's looking like it. We're really, really glad, and we can even talk to Dr. Gwen Vaughn about this.
Okay, so for purposes, I know you like to be referred to as Doctor on the radio, not by your first name. But since I have a pair of Doctors Vaughn, is that the plural, Doctors Vaughn?
That's correct.
Okay, I have a pair of Doctors Vaughn. To distinguish you, I have to call you by your first names.
Well, that's something we've talked about. I was going to bring this up later in the show. If we were to end up in a practice together and we mm-hmm. have a staff working with us, you can even talk to Polly about this. What would the methodology be for addressing the Doctors Vaughn? And so there's several submissions have been made. One is, first name, Dr. Mark, Dr. Gwen. Another one is Dr. Vaughn Tall, Dr. Vaughn Small. I remember in medical school we had these two anatomy professors that were father and son, neuroanatomy, at St. Louis University. One was they were both Dr. Young. And one was the young Dr. Young, the other one was the old Dr. Young.
I see.
So we could have the old Dr. Vaughn and the... I really used to not like that, but now that I'm 40, doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore.
That's right.
Is there anybody out there?
Anyway.
So, your choice.
I'm going to go with first names, probably.
Okay. All right. And that would be
fine. Or first and last names.
Okay. Yeah, whatever you're comfortable with there. Or is it okay if we call you Larry?
You may.
As long as we call you Senator.
That's right. I have no title.
Okay.
Just don't call me late for supper, as they say. Healthcare reform.
Healthcare reform. Yeah, they're trying to put these. Well, it's not really news. They're trying to put the two bills together, the two 2,000-page documents. To
that would make one 4,000-page document.
Oh, please no.
Yeah.
And we know another thing in the news, as far as with our show, we have not yet received an email with a picture of the Christmas tree along the side of Forest Hill Road.
That's okay. I haven't even sent Christmas cards out yet, so that's fine. I understand procrastination. I'm all about procrastination during Christmas. My wife will attest to that.
You came out okay this year, though?
I think so. I'll get our Christmas newsletter out by the 4th of July.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, Christmas. Yeah, we didn't do Christmas letters this year.
Yeah.
So if you were one of those people who normally would receive the Christmas letter from us, don't feel that you've been neglected. Nobody got one from us this year. So, but we have Facebook this year, so that's kind of, you know, that's kind of like a year-round Christmas letter.
It's kind of impersonal, too. And then you have to watch, you know, every 3 seconds someone says, I'm eating a burrito, you know, or whatever. It's like, I don't care. All right. Yeah. I'm over Facebook. It's a time vampire.
I learned how to ignore the people that are telling you every time they eat a burrito.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you're one of those people, I have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah. If I unfriend you, it's because your life is trivial. I don't want to hear every detail of it. All right.
Okay. Do we have any news? Yes, we do. We do. Did you get those articles?
I did. Here they are.
Here they are.
Montana has become the third state. Boy, I'm talking about cutting edge. Montana is the third state to approve doctor-assisted suicide.
You hear that, Tony? Montana is the third state to allow doctor-assisted suicide.
Now, wait a minute. See, this is based on their Supreme Court, who decided not to determine whether the Constitution guarantees the right, but rather that there is nothing prohibiting a patient from going that way.
What I hate about this is the only source I have on is the AP feed over Yahoo News. What I hate about it, though, is it's every time it says it, it says doctor assisted.
Right.
It's not suicide, it's doctor assisted. And what just burns me is there's nothing in here about, for the most part, I guess I should say nothing. There were some physicians who actually were a part of the suit. But other than those physicians who were part of the suit, it says nothing about doctors in the state, what they think of it, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of a one-sided news story.
Yeah, and I am certainly, and I don't know that our listeners find this a surprise, I am party to physicians who took the Hippocratic Oath and feel like this is completely against everything that doctors mm-hmm. are, and I'm very offended by it being doctor-assisted. If you're going to do it, if you're going to make it legal, don't involve my practice in it at all.
Yeah.
Do not put that on me.
And I think we should distinguish this from patients who refuse treatment, right? I mean, that's a completely different thing. If a patient refuses treatment and just simply allows nature to take its course, that's one thing.
That's completely different.
But the doctor taking an active role in accelerating a patient's death is...
And that's what this is. They say they want to do it because they want to have control. Well, the truth is, we don't. There's other ways to find meaning other than being able to pull the plug on yourself.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you, Montana. Yeah, it's a long slouching towards Gomorrah. Anyway.
Did Americans get any healthier over the past decade? Apparently there was some body, I don't know what it was called, Healthy People Objectives.
The HPO, I guess we'll call it.
And they...
HIPPO.
Healthy People.
Well, you'll see why we call it HIPPO in a minute.
It was first created in the 70s. They set some kind of agenda. I don't know who they're setting it for because I've never seen this.
For all of us.
Apparently it comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I don't know if that's necessarily by way of the NIH or not. But they've been, for more than 30 years, they've been setting these goals.
But the problem is nobody knows about the goals.
Setting
these goals for 30 years and reviewing them every 10, but they haven't bothered to tell the rest of us that they've set a goal for us and that we're supposed to meet it. And now they're acting all disappointed because
didn't meet their goal,
you know, we're fatter and we have more tooth decay than ever and we're having more births by C-section and doing all these other horrible things that they were hoping for us not to do or to reduce.
Yeah. Yeah, one here that I saw was they were hoping that adults who are obese would drop to 15%
of the population.
Well,
right. that was at a time when nearly a quarter of the population was obese. So they're hoping instead of 25%, they would drop the pop to 15. Now it's 34%. So we've actually gone the wrong way.
Yeah, that was a disappointment. They did have some things that we do better that we're healthier on. they don't list a whole lot of them, but they say there were some measures that actually did improve, and so for that reason they consider it a success. That must be the group that made the...
Well, what have we been successful with? I mean, flossing our teeth or what? Let's see.
Childhood vaccination rates, lowering cancer death rates, increasing smoking laws, and reducing most types of work injuries.
Increasing smoking laws was a victory? I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with the general populace. That has to do with people passing laws.
Yeah, I think the goal should be people smoking, not...
Yeah, actually smoking. You pass all the laws you want.
Whatever the methodology.
People still smoke.
Let's get the result that we want to have here. Okay, we want people to be able to call in today with their questions, either about the topic of how you become a doctor, if there's any budding future physicians out there that want to learn about the process, please call in at 885-3565. If you're outside of the immediate Auburn area, the number is 1-800-950-KHI. And after we get back from the break, we're going to introduce you all to Dr. Gwayne Vaughn.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I wanted to let you know a little bit about our practice at the Auburn Medical Group. The physician, nurses, and front desk personnel all approach the patient, asking themselves the question, how would I want to be treated if I was in the patient's shoes? Listen to what one of our patients has to say about her experience at the Auburn Medical Group.
My name is Susie Brown. I just want to sincerely thank that group of people for being there for me in some emergency situations. They are very efficient. Their staff, including their receptionist, even when you call her, she's got sympathy and compassion for you. And when you're ill, that's what you need. The nurses, the nurse staff is wonderful, and Dr. Vaughn listens to everything you say, and they just get on things. They do not let anything lag.
If you need a doctor, call us at 886-8630 or look at our website at auburnmedicalgroup.com.
Do you find yourself overspending, overeating, or in unhealthy relationships? Is your anger out of control, or do you struggle with drugs and alcohol? Are you tired of just trying harder to deal with your struggles? If you answered yes to any of these questions, there's help available. Celebrate Recovery is an international ministry that meets locally at Parkside Church, 3885 Richardson Drive, Auburn. Meetings are held every Friday night from 6 to 9:15 p.m. All areas of recovery are welcome. Celebrate Recovery is a Christ-centered, 12-step recovery program that offers real and lasting change. Contact Sheila Dobbin at 823-9911. That's 823-9911. For a listing of Celebrate Recovery locations, go to celebraterecovery.com. We invite you to join us at Parkside as we celebrate recovery.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Yeah, we're back. Welcome back to Medically Speaking Radio with Dr. Mark Vaughn, Larry Finney.
Is there anybody out there to welcome back?
That's right. Go ahead and write to us on our chat line there on the Ustream on the video on at medicallyspeakingradio.com, because that way we can have dialogue. If you're too shy to call on the phone and be on the air, you can do it that way.
Actual feedback.
Actually, you can call in on the phone at 885-3565.
And we welcome our listeners from Montana who haven't participated in the assisted suicide program yet.
Yeah. So this is our chance to introduce Dr. Gwayne Vaughn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Your listening public is out there. What I wanted to do to kind of walk our patients through the process of becoming a doctor is to walk through your journey and where it began. And I guess I'd like to go all the way back. You know, usually when we have a guest physician on the show, we introduce them, we say, this is where they went to medical school, this is where they did residency and fellowship. Instead of that being the intro for you, that's your whole show.
Nice. Starts a lot earlier than that, though.
Oh, tell us how it starts. Take us back to the beginning.
Well, my journey, I guess, started way back in junior high, I guess. That's when I kind of felt that I wanted to be a doctor.
Where did you go to junior high?
I went to E.V. Kane.
Wildcats.
The Wildcats, yes. I'm still a Wildcat at heart. So then I went to Placer High School.
Yay, Hillman.
Yes, still Hillman at heart, too. That's about when I started that journey, I guess.
In the best of times, in the worst of times.
It's great to be a Hillman. And it's still great.
Yeah.
Even though they lost this past week at the Kendall Arnett.
Well, that's because you keep watching basketball.
That's right. The football team did great. I was kind of hearing about that secondhand through my brother.
And I think there was some kind of cross-country victory, women's cross-country, which would, yeah, you'd hear about that through one of your brothers, too.
Yes. So I started Placer, and when I was a freshman, I knew I wanted to be a doctor, so I kind of went down that road. I always did well in school, although that's not necessarily a prerequisite to being a doctor. I think you just need to work hard, and I did had a little bit of both, luckily. I guess they called it gifted and talented education. I don't know exactly. The GATE program. Do they still have that here in Auburn?
I don't know. Somebody call in and tell us if they still have GATE.
Yeah. So I went to Placer and started taking classes that I thought would prepare me for to get into a good college initially. So I did all of the sciences, biology, chemistry, physics, and I always enjoyed the sciences and math.
Did they have the... did your high school counselor have a list of courses that were called UC Prep?
Yes.
So that if you wanted to get in the University of California, which is a pretty high standard, you have to have so many of foreign language. And,
right.
Yeah. And so you met those requirements.
I did meet those, and I exceeded those, I guess you could say, because I wanted to make sure that I was well-prepped for college. And if you meet those UC requirements, most schools, since those are so... most schools will take you based on those standards.
If for some reason you want to go to a particular college, what you'd want to do is contact their admissions department. Even in high school, if you say, man, I just want to go to Stanford, and you're a high school freshman, then write to them, call them, get on their website, find out if they have any special requirements now so that you'll make sure you don't miss it.
Right.
Which I think that's a lot of what medical school is, getting things done and not missing them.
That's right. Preparation.
Step of the way,
you can't be like Larry and procrastinate.
So you did the UC prep courses. You did
yes.
the foreign language. You the extra math, all that. But there's other things too to getting into college. Just to get into an undergraduate school, there's admissions testing.
Yes, and those have actually changed a lot since I've gone to high school.
There's been some changes in how they do them. There's two major ones, the SAT and the ACT. Did
right.
you take both of those?
I just took the SAT. I didn't
okay.
take the ACT.
All right, because sometimes that's another thing where you want to look at the college and see if they make a big deal of the ACT. You can actually find sometimes that you'll have a better chance of getting the school you want by taking the ACT.
Right.
If you didn't get a super score on the SAT, I've seen that happen.
Right. Some of them look more highly upon the ACT and weigh it more. And I think that's more for schools outside of California.
I was going to say, historically, it's more a factor as you get further east,
right.
Whereas California seems, at least in the past, it was a big SAT state. That could be changing. I don't know. Again, if you know, give us a call at 885-3565. Let us know if you've got somebody who recently got into college and knows the answer to that. So as far as application to college, once you're a senior and you're applying, how'd that go?
I'm kind of an outlier in that category because I knew where I wanted to go. I go to a church, and the church has a local college, Point Loma Nazarene University down in San Diego, and I knew that they had a very good pre-med program, so I applied there, and essentially I applied to three colleges, and that was one of them. I got into all three, but I knew that that was where I wanted to go, so I took that route.
Okay.
I guess another thing to mention is I took some honors and AP classes in high school, which is a great thing to do if you are gifted enough, I guess you could say, to go down that road. AP classes are essentially college prep classes where you can take a test at the end of the year and get college credit for taking those classes.
I would want to ask you, of the people that you went to medical school with who are your age, would you say most of them took AP classes when they're in high school?
Yes.
Okay, so that's becoming kind of a standard now.
Essentially, when I went in, I I went into college with 18 credits, so that's a whole semester wow. that I was ahead of everyone else.
Okay, so that would be a good thing also to include, and working hard, because for a lot of people it's harder work than others, and mm-hmm. if it's a lot of hard work, then that's what it takes to go down that path.
Right.
You were mentioning college choice. We had very similar experiences in the application of medical school. I know I'm jumping ahead from college to medical school, but it's because it has to do with choice of college that I'm talking about this. We went to similar colleges. You went to Point Loma Nazarene University. I went to Northwest Nazarene College, now called Northwest Nazarene University in Idaho. We actually applied to very similar panel of medical schools. We both applied to all of the medical schools in California. I may not have applied to USC because it was so expensive, but I think you did.
I did.
We both applied to St. Louis University in Missouri. We both applied to Creighton University in Nebraska. And we both got interviews at the exact same three schools out of all of those, and that being Creighton, St. Louis University, and Loma Linda University in California. What's interesting to me is that we got interviews there, and it just strikes me, why did we get interviews at the same schools out of all the ones we applied to? Why did that happen?
Is it possible they thought you were the same person?
12 years later, he's still applying.
So bad he's got to go through it again.
he's been trying all the other schools, and now it's 12 years he's come back to us.
We'll give this guy an A for effort, for stick-to-itiveness.
Finally made it around.
Now we know why you got in, Gray. I really hope that wasn't it. I had a little conversation with one of the admissions people. It was actually assistant dean at St. Louis University, Manny Comas, about that very question. And he looked at my whole application, and he was asking if I'd been accepted to other schools. And it was kind of funny. He said, "It's okay to tell me. It won't hurt your chance of getting accepted here if you've been accepted somewhere else." He was trying to get this information out of me, but I hadn't been accepted anywhere else at that point. And he was a little perplexed at why that was. He looked at the list of schools I'd applied to and saw that I hadn't been accepted. And being an admissions, not admissions director, but very high up in admissions at the school, he told me that he thought the reason I wasn't getting more interviews and more admissions was because of going to a school that the admissions committees were not familiar with. And so even though the schools that you may attend may tout how great they are at getting people into medical school, and they may indeed get some people in, it may be to very specific schools that are familiar with them and not a real broad net of medical schools. And I found that to be true of the school I attended. Even though they claimed a very high admissions rate to medical school, when you really looked at the numbers, first of all, you found that they do some working with the numbers. When they say they have that that acceptance rate, they keep it good. One way they do it is by weeding out a lot of people by having a very tough first few years of the pre-med program, hitting those students very hard, making it very hard grading in those classes, and then they lighten up on you as you get up to the upper division, which is kind of nice. They also strongly discourage people from taking the admissions test for medical school and from actually going through the application process if you're not good.
Right.
They do this. I don't know if the reason is to keep their numbers good, but it accomplishes that nonetheless. And then I remember when I talked with my admissions, pre-med counselor about where I was applying to medical school, there was a lot of pressure to apply to certain schools, even if I had not had much interest in them before that. He would really push it, and as it turns out, well, that's the schools that they're known at.
Right.
And so even though they're saying we have a 90-something percent acceptance rate of our applicants to medical schools, in truth, that's a funny number. And it's not to all medical schools at all. It's to some certain specific ones that know them. So I would say, even though there are some small schools out there that can say they can get you into medical school, when it comes to really applying to the breadth of medical schools out there, they know the names of the big name, high ranked colleges better than a small private college. I just want to throw that out. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I agree. Definitely true. Loma Linda is one of those. It's where I went to medical school. It is one of those schools that Point Loma kind of feeds into. A lot of these medical schools have essentially feeding schools from which they draw a lot of their students. And Point Loma was one of those for Loma Linda, and that maybe is the reason I got an interview there. But the UCs, I didn't get a single interview there. So
yeah, it's same here. Okay, so we're going to finish up with the experience of college for someone becoming a doctor, describing that. If you want to call in with a question, the number is 885-3565, or if you're outside of the area, 1-800-950-KHI, K-A-H-I. And if you have a question, you can, and you're able to watch us on the video at medicallyspeakingradio.com, you can just simply go on to the chat function on Ustream there and write in your question.
Gritstone Rock Club is Auburn's premier climbing and fitness facility. They offer rock climbing instruction for climbers of all ages and ability level. In addition to classes, Gritstone Rock Club hosts birthday parties, has a team-building ropes course, and provides professional outdoor instruction. If you want to climb with Gritstone Rock Club, contact them at 530-885-ROCK or online at gritstonerockclub.com.
Larry, have you ever been to Auburn Drug Company?
Yeah, that's the one with the marble soda fountain at 815 Lincoln Way.
Yeah, right there in front they have the marble fountain, and in back is an independently owned pharmacy right here in Auburn.
And that thing has been around for a long time.
Since the 1800s. They are so great because they actually fill your prescriptions when you ask them to, unlike the chain drug stores that make you wait.
You know, and waiting there wouldn't be a big crime because, heck, you could always go to the soda fountain. That's Auburn Drug Company at 815 Lincoln Way in downtown Auburn. Give them a call at 885-6524.
Few things in life are harder than thinking about serious illness or the death of someone you love. Research confirms that Americans want the basic services that hospice provides, care at home or in a home-like setting, treatment that preserves a sense of dignity and respect. Emotional and spiritual support for patients and for their families, and effective pain management. Hospice helps patients and their families deal with end-of-life challenges in a life-affirming, compassionate way that brings dignity, hope, and love to every day of life. This message of love and caring is the focus of hospice care. This message is brought to you by Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice. We can be reached at 886-6650 or click on the link for Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice on the Medically Speaking Radio website.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney with our guest, Dr. Gwayne Vaughn. And where we left off, talking about this journey through schooling and becoming a doctor, we were talking about choice of college. And we want to get to the good stuff here, but do run us through the college experience quickly.
Briefly, well, I went to Point Loma, and most colleges you go to will have a set-up curriculum for pre-med, which includes all the classes you'll need to take to get into most medical schools. Some medical schools require more, some less. Mostly, if you follow the pre-med program at your school, you will be adequately prepped.
And a lot of people are surprised that you actually have a major that's something else.
That's right.
You're not a pre-med major. You actually have a major in something. And that can be anything. It could be history. It could be social sciences.
Right. Mine was biology and chemistry, kind of a joint/double major. But it doesn't need to be that. I just always liked math and sciences, so I went that route. But I had people in my medical school who had sociology majors, psychology majors, pretty much anything, literature even. You can do anything and become a doctor as long as you take the courses required for the pre-med.
And it may actually, to a certain extent, be an advantage. I know that my medical school actually kind of liked people with a variety of backgrounds. They were trying to get medicine to be more well-rounded, I guess is what they're trying to to achieve. And so, yeah, I had tons of people with different majors like that.
Even so, at my medical school, I think they may look even more highly upon that you're just one, more than just one-sided, that you have a more broad background and can bring that to medicine to treat your patients.
Okay. So you're getting all these classes down, there's a program, and then you get to the spring of your junior year. What's that mean?
MCAT.
Medical College Admissions Test.
Which is fun? No, not really. That's not the word I would use to describe it. Probably the most important test of your career, I would say. So the MCAT consists of three different sections. It's so long ago. Let's see if I can remember them.
There's basic physical science.
Physical sciences.
Life science.
And then
an essay.
And then they score it based on your how you do in each of those categories. And for each of the physical sciences and life sciences, you get a score out of... Well, actually, there's two different life sciences, I believe.
That's probably what it was.
Right. So each of those is 15, and then the physical sciences is 15. So that's for a total score of 45. And the literature section or writing section is...
Scored with a letter.
Yeah, scored with a letter, which is kind of weird.
It was weird.
I still don't know exactly what that means. And I think for the most part, medical schools don't care about that letter either. I had a friend who got the top score. He got a T, which is the top. T is the top letter you can get. Unfortunately, he didn't do well in the other sections, but... And he didn't get into the medical school's first attempt.
I got an N. What does that mean?
I got an O.
Oh, hey, we're really close.
O for outstanding.
And so they're going to be looking at that. You can retake it in future years if you have to.
Right. You can take the MCAT, although medical schools do see every attempt that you take it.
Yeah, they do. They know. Mm-hmm. So if you jumped up in score, they're going to be asking you questions about that, which if you just say, I studied the sciences.
Yeah, right. I finally took it seriously.
I kind of want to get to the part where you're, every med student at some point, you've gone through all your science classes and your anatomy classes and so forth, but at some point you're going to have to touch another human being. You're not dissecting frogs and rabbits and fetal pigs and that kind of stuff. And I've always wondered, what the heck do you practice on? I mean, is it real sick people? We've got to probably start with cadavers first, right?
Right. Cadavers is in basic anatomy.
So we're jumping to the first year of medical school. Here,
which is first year of medical school. And you essentially have a dead human from which you dissect every single part of that.
Maybe someone from Montana, right?
So tell us about your first one. Very first time you walk in and there it is.
So there is, well, first is the smell.
Yeah.
They essentially keep them... fresh with formaldehyde, so you have to wear, I wore a mask, which was
a mask,
yeah, just to keep that smell away. And you, whenever you leave, your clothes smell like it, and you go home and wash your clothes, try to get that out. It's for me, it was a unsettling experience, just knowing that this used to be a live human who had a full life. Usually, they're older folks, and you have to start from the beginning and start dissecting. We started from the head and traveled south.
Yep.
And it's a great way to learn because it's a human, and there's really no other way to learn the anatomy of humans. I mean, you can look at something in a book 20 times, but until you see it and are able to feel it with your hands, it's a little different.
But necessarily there's no way to cause a cadaver pain. I mean, and you're treating them with respect and so forth, but they can't say, ouch, that hurts. Now,
true.
So what happens when you finally get to, how do you practice on live humans? Because at some point that's got to happen.
Live human testing for me, or testing, I guess examining, started... the end of first year medical school, and that initially started on each other, on other medical students. And that's you know, examining the ears, heart, lungs in a class called physical diagnosis.
You started that in their first year?
We did start that our first year. And they've actually changed it even more since I have left. We were the last year they had the, I think they referred to it as the old style curriculum. It had a name where your first 2 years were all preclinical, meaning in the classroom learning by books and studying, and then your last 2 years were clinical where you were actually in the hospital learning that way. Now they have completely switched it up, and a lot of medical schools have gone this way, and they've are doing more clinical years in your first 2 years. And they're, instead of doing basic sciences, divided into biology and the different classes, they're doing more system-based approach to the study of medicine, where you'll go lungs and study everything about the lungs, pathology, histology, microbiology, and they'll go that way, which started the year after I was in Loma Linda, so it is foreign to me, and I can't speak too much on that, but that is the way that most medical schools are going.
Yeah, and as far as actually getting hands-on experience with real patients, that is a shift that we see, is getting earlier in the education process, taking out some of the more basic, or I guess my generation would, or before my generation would call it more fundamental, instead of having all this book learning, getting to the nitty-gritty where the rubber meets the road, as far as, all right, this is actually a person that needs such and such care, this is how we help them, instead of all of the science behind the science. I say science behind the science because it really is disconnected from what you're doing in an office with a real patient. Mm-hmm. And so you guys in first year start actually learning how to look at each other.
Right.
And then it gets a little more personal.
Yes.
Because it's the whole body.
Right. And you can't do some exams on each other just because they're your friends, and it'd be a little awkward. So they actually bring in fake patients, I guess is what you could call them.
Sort of like actors or stands, people who have volunteered to do this or getting paid.
Well,
they
actually get paid. They do volunteer, but they also get paid fairly generously for it. I mean, you have a bunch of medical students doing exams on you, which may or may not be the correct way, which can sometimes hurt. So,
incorrect way. Does that be like turn your head and sneeze instead of...
Maybe.
That's the incorrect example.
I'm sorry, you fail.
Turn your head and belch, yeah.
So for us, this actually started the second year when, at the end of the year where we started having these patients, we had every system that we had to examine, cardiovascular, pulmonary, even genital urinary, with these acting patients. And they all knew exactly what to say and what to do to, they usually knew this system better than we did. So they're like, oh, you're off by about 2 inches. Move your stethoscope over and listen there.
And that goes for all body parts.
Right. You do everything. Even the personal exams, I guess we could call it.
Yeah. And I'm sure you had it too, but I remember specifically on, well, women's exam, breast and pelvic exams, rectal exams, we had instructors. They were, it was actually run by a nurse, and she was tremendous, but she really made a point of making the patient comfortable, you know, having technique where you're gentle, being respectful of modesty as much as is, you know, compatible with good examination, you know, using a warm speculum, just all these different little tricks that were taught to try to make the patient come out of there so that they wouldn't think that somebody had been very rough with them. Did you also have that kind of emphasis?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Ours was taught by a nurse. As well, actually, nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
And the staff was mostly nurse practitioners who taught you this, and they did make sure that you were respectful and kept the patient comfortable.
Okay. And so then at some point, you start being introduced to real patients. These are real people, but not patients. And then you get into the clinical where you actually start seeing patients. How does that happen?
Right. So the clinical years are your last 2 years of medical school, and this is the more traditional schooling where the first 2 years are preclinical and second 2 years are clinical. And you essentially get dropped into this world where you are a student physician and you are required and expected to examine and see patients on your own. Now, you are overseen by residents at the program, but you essentially are thrown into this world where you need to do that.
Yeah, at that point, everything you see, touch, feel, you report back to the boss, the resident who's over you, and it is supervised.
Right.
And what we're going to do now is go ahead and take a break and then come back with that transition into actually doctoring.
Since 1966, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital has been providing award-winning care to members of the community, to people just like you. The tradition of excellence continues today with our comprehensive family birth center, cancer services, 24-hour emergency care, and a whole range of outpatient services with convenient hours and locations to serve you.
In addition, we've been recognized for excellence in managing heart attacks, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical care. We are one of a select few hospitals in the state to earn recognition from VHA's West Coast region for sustained outstanding clinical performance.
To learn more about Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, visit us on the web at sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio. That's sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio.
Sutter Health, with you for life.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I want to tell you about my dentist, Rodney Kihara. His office is located right in town at High Street and Auburn Folsom Road. His staff is pleasant. They smile when you walk in, and you know who they are because they're there every time. We're talking about Flo, Cheryl, and Judy. Their pleasant faces welcome you into the office and let you know that you're in the right spot, a comfortable place to go to the dentist. Call Dr. Kihara's office at 888-1966. That's 888-1966.
The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's medically speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney speaking with Dr. Gwayne Vaughn about becoming a doctor. And where we left off, we were talking about the starting to be a so-called student doctor and actually seeing patients. And we did have a question come from somewhere. I guess that finger means in a second because he's texting on his phone. So, oh, wait, there is a call. Okay. And the call is from?
Yeah, I had a question. When does the you know, you're doing your intern or whatever you said it was called. When does it become like scrubs?
Great question. There are actually a lot of shows out there that try to portray residency is what scrubs is mostly about. And residency is after medical school. And it's funny because that's a question I actually get quite often. Is residency like scrubs? Or is it more like Grey's Anatomy? And my answer is always it's more like scrubs because it's actually more fun than all this romantic mumbo jumbo. That doesn't really happen.
Oh, of course not.
Of course not.
For me, it was ER when I was going through.
Right. The show du jour.
Yeah, that's right. So, tell us about once you get into a residency, what is it that you're then doing at that point?
So residency, this could probably be a whole talk in its own. Even the whole application process to residency and all the tests you need to take in medical school, and we won't, I guess,
and
get into that.
And all the stats on the statistics for primary care versus specialty and what it takes to do them all. Yeah.
Right. There are a lot of residencies out there, and every physician to become licensed needs to go through a residency program. I knew pretty early in my medical education that I wanted to do primary care, in a office outpatient setting, and that kind of limits you. Well, it doesn't limit you, but it pushes you more towards family practice, internal medicine, or pediatrics. And so I went that route. I couldn't see myself just seeing kids all day or just seeing old people, so I decided to mix it up, and I am a family doctor doing my family practice residency. I'm up in Reading right now in my second year of residency. All of these primary care residency programs are about three years long. Some of the more specialized ones you can go after that, and then all the surgical ones are at least 5 years. And there are some weird ones out there that are four, pathology, OB-GYN, et cetera.
So when you're up there in Reading and you're doing your residency thing, what kind of schedule are you doing, and what are the different things you're doing with patients?
Well, in residency, most of your work is in attached to a hospital. I'm at Mercy Medical Center up in Reading, and we are essentially the house staff, as they call us, for the hospital. We have our own services for pediatrics, obstetrics, gynecology, and medicine, and we rotate through those. Your first year, you are the quotes intern, and they do the most of the work. And you feel that your first year. The residency I go to is a little more relaxed. I guess not meaning that I'm getting not as good education, but I feel like I'm not getting worked to death, as you would see on Scrubs, I guess.
I'm here to tell you, because I did it in a different era, and working for 36 hours straight, I do not think accomplishes anything more for your learning experience than actually getting sleep and being able to read about what you're doing. And, yeah,
right.
So and don't feel bad.
They have actually made laws, federal laws, against working 36-hour days. The max you can work in one setting now is 30 hours.
Oh, wow. What a break.
And the max you can work in a week is 80
hours. What am
I going
to do with those 6 hours? I don't know what to do with myself.
Sleep, probably.
Yeah, that's right.
So they've actually made some steps to lighten it up, because residents were getting overworked, and they were seeing bad things happening from that.
Oh, I remember specifically when I was applying to the emergency medicine program at UC Davis and interviewing with Ed Panacek down there, I believe he was director of the residency at the time, either that or chair of the department. And he did not like the idea of me wanting to live in Auburn while working down there. And the reason was because there had been, I don't know if it was specifically their program, but he had knowledge of residents dying driving home.
Right.
Driving home from these, like I said, 36-hour shifts.
Yeah,
you know. And you don't always get a chance to hit the bed during that 36 hours. Sometimes,
right.
I can remember...
Sometimes the bed hits you.
Yeah. I can remember shifts where, the bed was not used. I was on the floors the whole time.
Right. I have been there, too, through some of my call nights.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you had professional patients who were not only paid to be patients, but were cooperative. Now you've moved into the opposite, where maybe they're not cooperative while they're paying you now. But are they? How much? Did you encounter any uncooperative patients, and do you have any interesting stories, like, say, in pediatrics or something?
They actually have a class, well, I guess you could call it a class on treating difficult patients and how to approach them. It's actually kind of...
Don't come at them from behind.
With a gloved finger?
Yeah.
There's always going to be difficult patients, be it pediatric patients or older patients who are just uncooperative with what you want to... or how you want to treat them. And they teach you how to kind of approach that and try to get around it.
Well, how do you approach them? Because when I was a little kid, I remember that I never trusted any doctor who came towards me smiling and had one hand behind his back, because I knew there's a needle. I know there's a needle coming, right? So I'm going for the corner. I'm looking for windows. I'm looking for any avenue of escape. So what do they teach you?
Well, sometimes some kids you just need to hold down, unfortunately.
There are, routine.
Yep, brute force. I don't give any shots personally. It's all the nurses who do that. So the children do not associate my face with pain. But there are those difficult kids where, you know, you just have their parents hold them correctly so you're able to do a adequate ear exam, see if they do have otitis media.
Yeah. We do have a write-in from one of our listeners, and it says, did you know you can't chat on your website? Must go to Ustream. Oh, sorry about that. So, and the way you go to Ustream is when you get on medicallyspeakingradio.com and you click on video. If you click on the big TV screen there, it'll actually open up a window to Ustream, and then you can chat with us. So thank you, listener. And any other listeners can also write in questions through, I guess you have to do it through Ustream if you're not going to call in at 885-3565. So handling the patients
can be a difficult task.
Sorry to interrupt you there.
Sorry.
And you talked about how you're taking these different rotations. Now, sometimes you work nights, right? Just a whole month of nights?
Right. There is a system in place in our residency called Night Float, where you work nights. It's essentially shift work. And the day team will leave and sign out to you, the patients, and you take care of all the patients that are under their care through the night, and then also take any admissions that come in through the ER.
And then they get picked up by the team the next day, and they
right.
do all the management at that point. You just do whatever has to be done to take care of them that night.
Right.
Until somebody comes in and does the
which sometimes
extensive
takes
management.
More work than during the day. All the bad things seem to happen at night, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, because that's when it's an acute problem, and you have to address it, get them stabilized for the day team to come in and
right.
just monitor what you set up.
Right. And that's our medicine service. We also have a obstetrics, gynecology, and pediatric service. For that one, we don't have a night float system. And this is residency specific. Ours doesn't. Some other ones do.
Yeah, you were talking about some unique things. Now, you don't work with medical students under you.
Rarely. There are, on occasion, a medical student will come to Reading and work with us, usually from UC Davis or Oregon, a local place where they want to come to our residency, so they'll come and check us out that way by doing a rotation there. But it's maybe five or six students a year just because we're out of the way.
The other thing that's unique about your program is that it's what we call an unopposed residency.
Right.
Compared to a lot of the places that training occurs at, where I trained, family medicine you know, had to compete with the every type of surgeon there was for working in the surgical suite. And yeah, go ahead and talk on that.
Okay. So when you go into primary care, especially family medicine, there are two different residencies you can go to, opposed and unopposed. Opposed means that you're at usually a university where there are all other types of residents, surgeons, OB-GYN, et cetera. But I am up in Reading where there is nothing. We are the only residents in the hospital. So we have essentially all of those patients at our disposal, I guess you could say.
So if you're doing your surgical rotation and they're doing an appendectomy, instead of being the family practice rotator coming through and the surgical residents doing the procedure and you're kind of
watching,
reaching between them as much as you can with one arm holding a retractor.
That was medical
school. Sometimes not able to see it. Your experience instead at your program would be?
First assist.
Wow.
It's the surgeon and me doing the procedure. And it even got to the point where the surgeon I was working with was, I guess, okay with me closing the patient. He would essentially break scrub and leave, and I would be there to do all the suturing up and close the incision.
Okay. And any last words of advice before we go to young budding physicians who are in the process of deciding that this is what they want to do with their life?
I guess the biggest thing is stick to it. That's the biggest thing, and work hard. You don't need to be a genius to be a doctor. It helps, but you don't need to. I'm not.
You're always
not.
Jealous of those guys.
Right. Those are the ones.
Okay.
Really smart ones.
And then, of course, people can write to you through us at the website.
Oh, yeah.
They can write to either Larry or myself. We can pass that on to you. If people have questions. We thank you for being on our show. We enjoyed this so much having you here, and we really hope to have you on the show more in the future, maybe when you live closer than Reading. We want to remind our listeners that we're on every Saturday at 10 o'clock, even sometimes when you don't have other shows on K-High. We're still here. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, this is Dr. Vaughn saying stay in good health.